Mingalaba, and welcome to today's Metta session. So as usual, we will start with some moments of sharing. So anybody who feels inclined to share something about their practice, something you have noticed, something funny, or something challenging, something joyful, something saddening, whatever it is, everything has its place. And we just leave it as this, with no comments. So,
I'll have a go, a short one.
Please, Shaimin.
It's been very challenging today because my body is not at ease. And because of that, the mind is not at ease most of the time. And I find it very difficult to wish anyone well. It's like completely self-centered. Like just focus on the not ease. That's all I have to say. I'm still trying.
Thank you, Shaimin. Yes, Martin?
I wanted to share with you that meanwhile you have a light closed, here it's snowing.
Thank you, Martin. Who else? Don't feel shy. Well, then before somebody else has made up their mind to share something, I will share something. And this is something here at the center. Those who have been here 3 years ago, when we last could do it here at the center, that was January, February 2020. At that time, a dog appeared at the center, a young dog with a very beautiful face. And because she looked a little bit like a wolf, I gave her the name Lupina. And, you know, we have heard the news that in all these years, past 3 years, she has been at the center. She is loved by everybody. She's a very kind, good dog. And she had puppies, and you know, some months ago, she and one of her daughters had puppies again, you know, as is the case. And apparently, the puppies of Lupina died, and this is also quite common, but the puppies of her daughter, they didn't die, and her daughter apparently had difficulties to get enough milk for the puppies. And so it was Lupina who adopted her so-called grandkids, and she was feeding them and taking care of them. And so now one of that of those puppies is still here at the center, and also a very cute one, and it's a she. She's loved by all the staff here. I found it so touching, you know, that, you know, as we have said, metta, kindness, friendliness, to care for others, it's not a quality that can only be found within humans, but it can be found in all kinds of beings. And so with Lupina, this is a beautiful example that shows dogs, they also care for others. So that's my sharing. Maybe in the meantime, somebody else.
What a nice story you told of those puppies. Thank you. Yesterday I felt a bit lonely in meditation, so I thought I was never there. I go to the meditation hall you sent a link of, and there I found Frederica, and afterwards Elkaterina. And that was very nice and helpful to meditate together. That's what I want to share.
Thank you, Monique. And somebody else, maybe? Well, then with this we go on. And actually, yeah, the sharing of Monique, it's a good reminder for all of you that this virtual meditation hall is there 24 hours, so that you, you know, can join there, and most likely you will find somebody else in there meditating. All right, now I give over to Judith.
I don't have the link. This is the first time I hear of this shared room. Could anybody send me the link for that? That sounds really good.
Yes, I can send it to you.
Thank you.
So then, handing over to Aya Viranyani.
Thank you, Aria. And warmly welcome, everybody. It's quite lovely to hear from you, Martine, about snow. Because as you say, Aria and I are dressed quite lightly because it's the cold season here, but it's still quite warm. And even though we're in a different weather pattern, we're in the same beautiful metta field. Even though we're all in different places, we're sharing the same retreat space. Even though we might feel lonely, as you said, Monique, it can feel that way sometimes. Others are doing the same thing we are, even if we can't see them. So I'd really like to, first of all, make a strong thank you to Federica and everybody at Pianda Chiliechi who set that beautiful cherry tree meditation room up. It is a wonderful space. Sometimes you go and there's nobody there but you, and sometimes you go and there are other people there that you know. Sometimes you go and there are familiar faces. And so it's a wonderful resource if you're not feeling motivated to practice, feeling a little lazy or just too on your own for comfort. in the practice. Because we can't do this alone. Well, we can. We do practice alone. But as the Buddha said, spiritual friendship is the whole of the holy life. And I really love this because it was a really strong statement from the Buddha. And as you might remember, the root meaning of metta is friendliness. So spiritual friendship, metta in the spiritual realm, is something we develop together that's so incredibly supportive. We care about each other, even though we might not even know anybody's story. We feel bonded in silence, whether it's an in-person retreat or a virtual one like this. Maybe you only know somebody from a little square on their screens. But then, if you have the opportunity to see them in person, there's a really special feeling of, oh yeah, we've met a lot. I don't know you, but I know you. And we're not separate. And these bridges of friendship that metta builds start sort of tentatively sometimes. In our culture, we're trained to be individualistic. It is a cultural virtue to be independent. And a certain kind of independence is wonderful, it's very healthy. But unhealthy independence, the kind of independence that says, I can do it myself and I don't need anyone else, or, oh yeah, you know, being in just a little bubble of ourself, our life, that's not healthy, spiritually, socially. And it's a sad way to live as a human being. We don't like it. So when we experience this kind of experience, when we have this kind of experience, we often seek out connection. And even if we are completely alone, this metta connection that we forge in is so incredibly precious. And even more so, it's incredibly precious because it's not limited to human beings. We can have metta for all beings everywhere without exception. And one thing I absolutely love about Zoom as a venue for retreats is occasionally you see other beings that inhabit other people's spaces. I, of course, don't inhabit space with a cat or a dog. But you'll see sometimes cats particularly, they'll sit on the keyboard or you'll see a tail going by. Or you'll see a dog in the background. And in the context of this metta retreat, it's so interesting to watch how that metta, that friendliness, that care that connects with all beings, just naturally can go out like that. So we develop an interdependence, a healthy personal independence, but also a profound connection with each other in this space. And then as we go through the categories, with all beings everywhere without exception. Beginning, of course, as we said, or it's easy. The way this practice is laid out when you read about it in the Visuddhimagga, which is a commentarial text, it seems so linear. well, first you do this, and then you attain jhana, and then you do this, and then you do this, and you go on from category to category, as though it's just a straight line between oneself and all beings. But part of the reason the support of friends is so important in these retreats and in our practice in general is that it's not linear like that. It goes up and down and up and down, depending on physical conditions, depending on energy, depending on all sorts of things. Sometimes we can't even figure out why it's going up and down. It doesn't make any sense. Please don't try to figure that out. It's a waste of energy and a waste of time. And it's fruitless. It doesn't come to end. But just to know that is a natural part of the practice. And so when we're not comfortable in the body, when we're dealing with a physical affliction or just plain tiredness, that affects the mind, that affects our concentration. And it becomes harder to find an access to metta. So that's when this companionship, excuse me, I'm going to break into my senses to express delight at Olivia's Zoom space. This companionship, not only people, but dogs, cats, becomes so precious. Because maybe we can't find that access to metta. And then we see somebody's dog, and our heart just goes, oh, beautiful, may they be happy. Not only is there support for the practice that naturally happens in a group, there's a kind of peer pressure that keeps us from being too lazy or, just blowing it off. But also, there is the connection with each other and the understanding that just like I want to be happy, so do these other people. It brings us out of isolation and into a heart space where metta is easier to find. And when we hear the stories that others tell of struggle, of, no, today I just didn't want to do it, or whatever it is, it makes us feel less alone. So thank you for your virtual support, everybody, for being here day after day. It's really no small thing. This up and down and up and down and up and down aspect of the practice, the fact that the practice is not linear but sometimes feels more circular, is a manifestation of the fact that you cannot control the mind and the body. And it's a manifestation of the process of purification. One thing that is guaranteed in this process of going through these categories from relatively easy through more difficult categories to all beings, it is guaranteed, absolutely guaranteed, that everything that is not metta habitually in the mind will come up to be seen. Or maybe not absolutely everything, but things that are close to the surface will certainly be not. This is part of that process of the practice that can be so frustrating. We think we're doing it wrong. But purification demands that we acknowledge and see clearly what is in the mind. That we don't have to deal with it in a vipassana way, but that we face the fact that it's there, whatever it is. It might be irritation, it might be boredom, it might be attachment, it might be lust, it might be greed, it might be self-judgment, it might be deep fear, it might be old memories. All sorts of things arise and can be come up in this process. So this is one of the bigger manifestations of that moving up and down and up and down, where we access metta and then, boom, we find ourselves down in another trough. And we access metta again and down again. It feels like riding waves sometimes. This process is essential. And so I personally like a metaphor that comes from the place where I was born and raised and lived a lot of my life in Hawaii. And it's surfing. When the waves are big, you have to take care. But you just learn to surf those waves. And sometimes in that process of learning to surf, you wipe out. You get thrown from your surfboard, or if you're body surfing, you just get dumped and head first into whatever deep water you're in, and you don't know which way is up. And you have to just relax and know you'll rise to the surface eventually. It can be a really challenging process, this learning how to surf these waves as the practice goes up and down. So please know you're not alone. You're not the only one going up and down. And this training, Ariya beautifully spoke yesterday about how we train the mind so that it becomes, metta becomes second nature. So this training is very much a training in surfing. In surfing the waves, learning for ourselves first to trust that this is normal, and then to trust that we can deal with whatever comes up. We have the ability, the skills, the meditation instruction to know what to do when we wipe out and we find ourselves full of unwholesome mind states and we don't want to practice metta and the mind is just rebelling. We'll go into a lot of the nuts and bolts of that later. But just to say, this process that we each undergo of falling down and getting up and falling down and getting up is, I think, one of the most important aspects of this practice in developing that habit of metta so it becomes second nature. Because it takes energy to do that. It takes commitment to do that. As Ariya said, it takes care and engaging in the practice and patience to do that. And when we engage in the practice in this way, when we simply acknowledge what has arisen, take a deep breath and begin again, over and over and over. When things are difficult, the energy that it takes to do that is exactly what begins to solidify the habit of metta, of going to metta. And the more times we fall down and get up, the more deeply established our habit of metta becomes. So whatever energy you're using to keep coming back here to mitigate the challenges of the practice, to get up when you've fallen down, just to keep going when you'd rather not, to support each other in the practice and yourself. Whatever energy you are doing in support of them is also energy that directly goes to establishing this habit of metta. And habit is something that it's hard to measure. When we're developing a habit, usually there's not much indication that anything's happening. Often we develop habits without even knowing we're doing them. In the case of the metta habit we're developing, you know, that habit of inclination to kindness, we know we're doing it. And we wish we had a little metta Fitbit that would track our phrases every day, or, you know, track the amount of habit we're developing today. It would make it a little easier if we had, you know, something we could see on our watch or our phone. At one point when the practice was a real struggle for me, I used a mala. And every time I went one time through that mala, I knew I'd said the phrase 108 times. And that was actually really helpful because I had the sense that I was doing something. And I was, even though I cynically didn't think so, but it was desperation that drove me to that. So you might not know what's happening. You might not know that the habit is being developed. You might be getting frustrated that, quote unquote, nothing is happening, because nothing seems to be happening. As Sharon Salzberg's story that Aria told is such a wonderful example of that. You think nothing's happening, and then you drop a bottle, and it's like, whoa, you're such a klutz. Oh, but I love you anyway. Huh? Who said that? Or a Katerina's story yesterday was so beautiful. It's like, huh? That's not me. At some point in the metta practice, this kind of experience is almost universal. It's like, who said that? That's not normal for me in this circumstance. And we might not know this is happening until something comes up in our life that shows us that happened. Like, you know, the guy being mean to our dogs, or somebody cutting us off in traffic, and the first thing we think is, wow, we need to save, rather than, you jerk. We don't know these things until they happen. But habit, even though it's invisible, is incredibly powerful. I've told this story a lot, but I like it. So I'm going to tell it again, begging patience for those of you who've heard it multiple times. But it really speaks to me about the power of habit. Quite a long time ago now, decades, I was at IMS for a three-month retreat. And I was to begin cooking in a job as a cook there right after the retreat started, ended. So I sat the retreat, and then I was going to go work in the kitchen. And as my yogi job, I was given, I didn't ask for it, but I was given the job to chop vegetables, which suited me just fine. This job I really liked. So I happily went into the kitchen every morning and chopped vegetables. And time was important because we had to be in the meditation hall at 8 o'clock. We had an hour to do our job. We had to keep looking at the wall over there to make sure, you know, it was up to us to, you know, if we could finish, we could finish. But if we had to, you know, look at the clock and go, okay, time to put the knives away, wash the knives, the cutting boards, and, you know, go take care of ourselves before we go into the hall. So the clock was there on the wall to my left. In between when I finished the retreat and started on staff, there was a couple of weeks. and I went away and I came back. And my first morning in the kitchen. Time is important when you're working, and I was shadowing somebody, and I was, you know, time is even more important when you're cooking, and there's 100 yogis out there and they have lunch and you have to get it ready. And they had changed where the clock was and had put it on the opposite wall. Do you think I could look at where the clock really was? No. I kept looking at this bare space on the wall for months. For as long as I had been in there chopping vegetables, I was looking on the wrong wall for the clock, which had been moved to the other wall. It was so funny. So I just, by habit, go, okay. Chop vegetables or whatever I was doing. It took as long to change that habit as it had taken to establish it. And that was a habit that didn't have much karmic consequence or very deep roots. It didn't have deep roots at all, very shallow roots. It taught me a lot about the power of habit and about how when you do something again and again and again, you don't know what you're doing. You don't notice that you're developing a habit. It's invisible, but it's happening. So two things. First, the habits that we come with are, you know, we call metta, this development of metta as our second nature. Well, our first nature, the habits we come in with, based on conditioning and karma and causes in this life and who knows when, they can be very deeply rooted. They can be rooted in trauma. They can be rooted in very difficult circumstances. It's going to be a lot more deeply established, these habits, than just looking at the clock on the wall. But please don't be discouraged by that, because unlike the clock on the wall, changing those habits for a metta habit is not a one-to-one relationship. It's not going to take as long to undo those habits as it took to do them because of the power of metta. The Buddha said in the Anguttara Nikaya about how having one moment of metta is better than having lived 100 years without it. That speaks to the power of a single moment of metta. Metta, when it comes, as those of you who have had this experience today or any time in the last couple of days will know this viscerally, metta can be a very strong experience, and it completely erases any ill will when it's strong. It substitutes, it's a substitution of opposites. And I have to say, the reason I am sitting here in robes, devoting my life to this, is because of a single moment on my very first intensive retreat where pure visceral rage was replaced by its opposite in an instant. I thought at the time it was something very unique and special. It's not. That's just what metta does. It's normal. But it's very powerful because when you have this experience, you never forget it. And you understand that rage, fear, difficulty of any kind is not as solid as it seems. The metta is much more durable. It's much stronger. It's much more powerful. So we cultivate the habit. But cultivate the second nature simply by repeating this phrase over and over again, simply by inclining the mind over and over again. It's a training. And it is quite magical. And And it's very, very much really common sense. The Buddha said in the Majjhima Nikaya, whatever one frequently thinks about and ponders, that will become the inclination of their mind. Yeah, that's exactly it. Frequently think about metta, frequently say the phrase, and that, in a nutshell, what the Buddha is saying there, that's exactly what we're doing, creating that habit, so that metta becomes second nature. So as we deepen in the practice, as things get more challenging, leaning on the support of this container we've created here, leaning on the support of each other, and trusting the process that happens when we develop this habit. It might be messy. It might not be easy to trust because it's invisible, but it works. And I can say that. But it's much more powerful when we experience it, as many of you have, many of you know. And it only gets deeper because of that circularity of practice. Every time we do the practice, no matter how many times we've done it, we encounter new waves to serve, deeper habits that might not have been so obvious. And so the mind gets more and more and more skilled at inclining to metta. Metta becomes a more deeply powerful habit. And the mind inclines habitually more and more to metta, becoming more and more and more and more and more pure. It's such a beautiful thing. And each stage along the way, and I don't use that word stage in the sense of, oh yeah, like the stages of insight, but no, they're not stages of metta, but in each category will be purifying something. So we move on in the categories today. And before we sit, I wanted to say just a couple of things. We move the dear friend. And what gets purified in this particular category often is attachment. Emotional, affective love. The texts call this kind of emotional connection that we call love in a conventional sense, the near enemy of metta, because it seems like it's metta, but it has an agenda. Just wait until that person treats you wrong and then see how you feel. Yeah, we all know how that feels. But metta is boundless. It doesn't care. It's without agenda, it doesn't care how people treat us. So in this category, these are categories of people who are dear to us, people we know really well, family members, dear friends, people who we easily love, we easily see their goodness, but because we know them well, of course, there's stuff happening there. We might not even know. There can be attachment to be purified, or resentment, or any number of things can come up with this. And if this happens, please don't worry, it is natural. The dear friend category is really quite wonderful because it shows us viscerally the difference between conventional love and metta. And we move through a more emotional, affective experience of metta that is not pure metta, but metta tinged with attachment, to something much more still and beautiful. So choosing somebody in this category who is not complicated. I said that slowly because it's really important. So choosing somebody whose goodness you very easily and recognize. Somebody you easily love and with whom you have a clear and uncomplicated relationship without resentment, without that little bit of friction that can happen. And choosing somebody for whom you have no possibility of sexual attraction. So do not choose a partner. Or somebody of whatever gender you are most attracted. So making sure this person is somebody with whom you have a clear relationship. Other people may come up as you radiate metta for this person. That's normal, please don't worry. Just let them be there kind of in the background. You can acknowledge they're coming in and they can, you know, you can say to them later. Just stay with this one person. So let's begin the practice now. Use the same phrase you chose for yourself and your benefactor. Just keep it really simple. Getting comfortable physically, really comfortable, at ease. Taking care of the body if you have a challenge with back and you need to lie down, or challenge with illness and you need to lie down. Making sure you're comfortable in terms of temperature, that you're not too cold or too hot. When you're ready, closing your eyes. Connecting with this body. It has a name and a story. And in conventional terms, we call it me, I. Just connecting with the experience of this mind, this body right now, with a friendly, gentle attention. Touching with a tender awareness, whatever is predominant in your experience right now, whatever it is, however it is. Receiving the pleasant or the unpleasant equally. And just resting back in presence for a moment. Adjusting your posture if you need to. And bringing this tender, receptive awareness to the heart center. Anywhere in the area of the chest that is obvious to you. And you can begin radiating loving kindness for a few minutes to whomever it's easiest, be it yourself or your benefactor. In the same way as you've done before, using the same phrase. Or whatever phrase for you really resonates today. in closing with this person. Now bringing to heart and mind this dear friend or dear one, with either an image or a felt sense, connecting with this person. And just as you've done for yourself and the benefactor, begin to incline to metta for this person using the phrase you've chosen, the same phrase. Just resting gently with the meaning of that phrase as you silently repeat it to yourself. Directing the heart. To metta for this dear friend. May my dear friend be well, happy, and peaceful. May my dear friend be peaceful and at ease. May my dear friend be safe and protected from harm. May my dear friend be healthy and strong. Whatever phrase you've chosen. Connect as you name this person with that image and felt sense, and then turn the heart towards this well-wishing for them and connect with the meaning of those words. Know what you're saying. And as you connect, you plant a seed. So again and again and again in the silence, continue to plant this metta garden. Again and again and again, starting over when you need to. Cultivating that habit of inclining the mind to metta over and over again. Developing that second nature. With this well-wishing for the dear one. Moment to moment to moment, just keep turning the mind to kindness. So of course, in the photographs today, continuing with this category, the different. Please remember you're not doing it wrong if things are not flowing. You're just creating the habit with a new category. So just continue with this, dear friend, in the same way as you did with in the previous days with yourself or the benefit. And in general activities, of course, either stay if it's possible if you're not doing something very engaging with the mind and body. You can stay with the dear friend, or you can just do what Aria's been beautifully calling free style metta. Radiating metta to whoever is appropriate in the moment, whoever's right in front of you. Cultivating metta in action in whatever you're doing, wherever you're going. Cultivating metta in speech, if you're interacting with people. Please remember this is a very fluid, flexible practice. So if you encounter really strong difficulty that feels overwhelming, not just bumps or the occasional wave, but real overwhelm, feel free to give it a lot of space. You can go back to metta for yourself. You can do some vipassana just to get some ground under your feet. It may not happen, but if it does, that can happen too. That's okay. Just find your way through it. And just patiently incline the mind, patiently develop this habit. And who knows what's happening in the back. So thank you for your practice, everybody. I'll turn you over to Aria now for whatever questions you might have and for time for metta chanting.
So yes, now there is space for your questions regarding the metta teachings, regarding your own metta meditation practice. So just unmute yourself and bring forth your question or raise your virtual hand.
Is it correct if you notice tension in your body while practicing metta, to take some time or attention to try to release it while continuing practicing the phrase?
Thank you for your question, Bas Etienne. Yes. It's a good question that you pose, because that's different from the approach to tensions or painful sensations in the body when you're doing vipassana meditation. Like in vipassana meditation, you would turn your mindfulness to that tension, to that painful sensation, be mindful of it, observing it, trying to see its nature. But in metta meditation, we use a different approach, because, as you know by now, you know, our focus is wholeheartedly to cultivate the quality of metta, kindness. That's our object of cultivation. And so if there are tensions or any unpleasant sensations in the body, yes, then feel free to release the tension maybe to move the body, to change your posture. Just move the body while sitting, do some stretches or leaning forward, leaning backward, or, you know, stand up and continue in the standing posture, or just standing up a few moments and then sitting down again, or even lying down. So that's all permissible when we are doing metta meditation, because we do not want to be bothered by this tension or unpleasant sensations in the body.
I want to ask a question, like, what's the difference between doing the practice while walking, and what's the difference between doing it while sitting?
All right, thank you, Elroy. The difference between doing metta while walking or while sitting is simply the outer form of your posture. In sitting, you're in the sitting posture and cultivating the metta with the help of these metta wishes. In walking, the body is walking, moving, but you also cultivate the metta with the help of the metta phrases. So in regard to the actual practice of cultivation, there is no difference, just the outer form. The posture or the activity of your body is different. Yes, Judith?
I have a question. Somebody's waving behind you, by the way. I'm waving and he's waving back.
Yes, these are a couple of nuns who have, you know, done the flowers for the Buddha.
Yes, I noticed. When you say the phrases, it's the idea to connect inside with whatever you wish or whatever you're saying. And I'm finding that, for example, happy, I find easier to connect to than health or healthy, being healthy, because that doesn't sit like something that I feel. That's more like a almost a mental construct. And I'm sure I haven't tried all the other ones yet, but I'm sure there must be differences in ways you can connect to it or not. What do you suggest when it comes to health, good health?
All right. Thank you, Judith. You know, it doesn't matter so much which words or which aspects do you choose. And so if for right now you connect more easily with happy, then, you know, just stay with that. And maybe later on, you know, when the metta has become more strongly embedded in your heart and mind, then using the word healthy is kind of, you know, not an issue anymore. Then you understand it in a different way. So, you know, mental happiness and physical health, you know, we all have our own ideas of what that constitutes. And we have all different relationship to these expressions, to these concepts. And so, yeah, the way into cultivating metta is to see, to experience which, you know, door, entry gate is easiest for you. And then trust, you know, that later on other doors will also open and facilitate an easier access. But, you know, for health, I mean, this body is susceptible, you know, to sickness, to pain, to unpleasant sensations. So that might be a bit more difficult to feel comfortable with the health. But you know, the wish, may I, may my benefactor, may my dear person be healthy, again, as we have pointed out, it's this wish. It's not something that then needs to happen. You know, it's just this unconditional wish. May she, may he, may I be happy, healthy, sorry, than whatever that health constitutes. Okay? If there is no more question for the time being, then we go on to the metta chants. And I would like to start with the four boundless states on page 6 at the bottom, the chant that just consists of the four words metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. It's, you know, once you know these words, the melody, the rhythm, it's an easy chant, you know, that kind of comes easily. To me, it's quite a joyful, uplifting chant. And this also can be used in day-to-day life, you know, when we walk upstairs, you know, we could go up there, metta, karuna, mudita, and so on. Or when we are getting dressed, or when we take a shower, you know, just a few moments of filling our heart and mind with this metta chant, and then, of course, with metta. So we'll do it a number of times, and it's a canon. You know, one can start later on. We'll begin. Metta karuna mudita upekkha. 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 We stay on the same page and go to the chant at the top, where it says Frida, peace. So this is a chant in Swiss German. You have the English translation below. And, you know, it's just a Swiss German song, a canon, can be chanted, sung in four groups. But when I discovered it, you know, I realized it just had the perfect metta words. The only thing that I did was to change the first and second line. So the original version was with like, may you be peaceful, may I be peaceful, may there be peace for all of us and for the whole world. But, you know, to kind of fit the sequence as we do the practice, starting the cultivation of metta for ourselves, so I changed it that the first line is, may I be peaceful, and may you be peaceful, and so on. And for those of you who are not so familiar with Swiss German, I just read the words that you hear them. Frieda wünsche ich mir und Frieda wünsche ich dir, Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Now we are going to chant it. Many of you are familiar with. You can do it in a canon. And you do it a number of times so that those who do not know it yet can get familiar with it. Need to find the tone. Again. Frieda wünsch ich mir und Frieda wünsch ich dir. Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsch ich mir und Frieda wünsch ich dir. Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsch ich mir und Frieda wünsch ich dir. Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsch ich mir und Frieda wünsch ich dir. Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsch ich mir und Frieda wünsch ich dir. Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. And as the last chant for today, we will go to the very last page, page 8. It's the sharing of blessings. So this is not really a metta chant. It's the sharing of all the goodness that we have performed today, yesterday, past week, and so on. So all that is meritorious, all that is wholesome, all that is good, as it says here in this chant, through the goodness that arises from my practice. And so the practice, you know, the Dhamma practice, includes so many different aspects. It's the virtuous behavior, the sila, or it's being generous, the dana aspect, it's, you know, the bhavana aspect, practicing meditation, the cultivation of the heart and mind, in this case, you know, the metta, loving kindness, or cultivating the paramis, such as the patience or the energy, the devotion that we put into the practice. So, you know, to bear in mind all these good qualities that we are performing today, that we have been performing today, even though it was just a moment or two or three. And it's also a good thing to do at the very end of the day when going to bed. And in this way, you know, to reflect on the goodness that we have done during the day. Instead of, you know, just blaming ourselves for having failed there and not being kind there, and this was not good and that was not done in the right way. So instead of falling into negativity, take a few moments to turn the mind to the goodness. So then we will do this chant. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind. Until I realize Nibbana, in every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all this, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. So with this, we end this online session, and in 15 minutes, at least for me, we'll start the group session. Group A for me, Group D for Ayuvelvarnyani, and I think she will say something. You are still muted.
Just holding up five minute hands. So 5 minutes for me.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.